Guess so. All right. Welcome, everyone. This session is WinB319, building a bulletproof Windows BitLocker. My name is Sami Laiho. I'm from Finland. I'm an MVP in the Windows OS. I do a lot of talks on Windows operating system troubleshooting and security, and this time we're going to talk about hardware encryption. If you want to follow me on Twitter, please do so. I try to tweet a lot. And I got a free newsletter if you would like to order it. So there's a code for it. I've been doing this for quite a while. I've been training for about 15 years. And I used to be a scuba diving instructor first. So I actually did my first deep dive into Windows XP in 2001. I always show this when I start a talk. It was the most fun I've ever had combining my two professions at that time. So I tried to teach Windows XP below the Atlantic Ocean, about 8 meters. But it wasn't Lenovo at that time. It was still IBM, but the IBMs couldn't make it. But luckily, the students did. Nowadays, my profession is a bit more forgiving, as people tend to only bump into blue screens from time to time, but not usually running out of oxygen in the classroom. So, as you can probably hear, my English is not my first language. We have a little bit trouble of getting out of the country. So, just before we start, I will show you a news clip, because as of today, I just read the news that actually a Finnish guy had won the world's most funniest person title in US Laugh Factory Comedian Club. He had about 150,000 votes, and the next guy had about 50,000. So there's someone else from Finland speaking as well. I'm going to show this to Ismo. So just so we could get it on record, could we please just give him a round of applause? Thank you. That's about Ismo. Let's go back to this. So just a small thing. I always start my presentations with a few words in English. No, I'm not going to talk English, but just to tell you, basically to give me some slack if I'm losing my words. So Finnish is my first language and English is not. I honestly was just talking to Johan, Arvid, Mark and Mikael Nyström from Sweden, and I gave them a cool baseball cap that had a word of the Finnish administrator. And Michael actually asked me that, yeah, but you can still, if you log on to a computer, you can still use administrator. No, we can't. There's only 8 languages out of 107 Windows languages that have decided to actually translate the username of the administrator. Not only the display name like all the wise people do, but 8 countries have actually translated the username itself. So when you get administrator, or here you get administrador, we get this. It gets quite hard. It's not just the long word, but it's with the weird letters. So Finnish is easy. I always say that we learn it at about 3 years old, so it can't be that hard. So I'm going to teach you some Finnish also. For example, we take the word cat in Finnish. We have a few different, dog this time, yeah. So we'll have word dog in Finnish, which has only a few ways of saying it, so you can just start learning. That's actually I'm not even getting started because there's still this. So no wonder why J.R.R. Tolkien, who wrote the Lord of the Rings, chose Finnish as the base of the language of the elves, because he wanted to find a language that no one would understand. So I'm quite out of my comfort zone talking about BitLocker, because in Finland we don't need BitLocker at all. We've got everything encrypted, so. I was honestly in Seattle about a week ago. I was in Seattle, and I saw myself sitting in a room with all the other instructors, and I saw myself being the only guy who didn't have a privacy filter on my screen. And I was sure, because it was a security-related thing, I was sure I was going to get punished for getting it home. And took about 15 minutes, and the guy next to me was like, Sami, have you noticed that you're the only guy who doesn't have a privacy filter? I was like, yeah, and luckily, out of pure luck, at that moment, I had an email from Finland on my screen, so I just told him, like, want to try? He was like, oh, okay, now I get it. Yeah, yeah, you're okay. So I've got a few projects I'm working on. I do a lot of blogging, and I do my own software called Adminizer. That's my own company. I work for a training company in Finland called Sovelto, so I'm also half of the time I'm training and speaking, half of the time I'm doing consulting. So this is my free advertisement moment, and that's all you're going to get. Housekeeping, there's a few of you here that were asking me before the session that could you get some really cool swag, because I had some swag last time. I was luckily given the opportunity to have three sessions, as I was only prepared for two sessions. So now I have three sessions, which means that I don't have so much stuff, but I will have. So I have two more sessions. And after the next session, I should have ready the new swag. So I used to have this old Järjestelmävalvoja t-shirt for people. Oh, sorry, this one. So that was already last year, so now it's old news. So now we have something which is way more cooler, which is the official Järjestelmävalvoja baseball caps. And they actually have LED lights. So it's easier to do your installations when you can see. And it blinks. Okay, fair enough. Sorry, there are two more sessions. And if you want to get one, I've got about 200 of those lined up, waiting to be shipped here for the sessions that they were meant to, so they will be here. I have two more sessions after this, so sorry, but you'll have to come to another session if you want to get one. I've got one and I can give it to someone, but that's all. So I'm just going to try this. I've never done it before, so. Ooh. Somebody got it. I really hope for my sake it's not lying on the floor and no one took it. But okay, so why we need encryption? First of all, encryption will be needed for data, so that's the old news. You need encryption for preventing people from stealing your data. There's over 800,000 devices stolen on airports in US and Europe only. That's not including Asia, for example. So there's a lot of devices stolen daily. So we do need it, and we know that that's one reason. The other reason for security-wise is that all Windows versions get cracked with a single command. There's not a single version out there except Server Core. Server Core version is a nice exception to this. I'll show you a demo on that. And also secure decommissioning. So if you think about buying software to wipe your disks, you don't really need to do that with BitLocker, as if you just use a format command which is Vista or newer, then it'll just wipe securely all the keys from the drive, so it'll be better than wiping the disk with an external software. So those are the three main things. Let's start instantly with the first demo. So let's crack Windows just quickly. I've got another session called Black Belt Security, which has a lot more cracking in it, but this will be just a quick one. So just to keep it a bit more interesting, I am going to use Windows 10. So just to show you how Windows 10 will be cracked into. Most of you should know this because it's one of the most obvious ways of hacking a computer if you have physical access. So this is like a scenario where your computer gets stolen on the airport or in the airport. Just to make it a little bit more fun, what I'm going to do is I have a user called master and I have a user called administrator. Administrator is disabled, so I can't use that. And the master one will change its password so that I can't know it. So we'll just use net user master and give it a password, but we'll use the random variable so it'll change every single time. So random has a number between 1 and 32,000, so it'll change every single time, so I have no idea what it is, okay? What we'll do now is we'll do this the dirty way. If you go to like Paula's session, Paula will show you like the neat way of doing this. I'll do it the dirty way. It's by far the quickest one, but it also messes up with the computer in the worst way. So What I will not have time during this session is to show you how to uncrack this machine. So that's what we'll do in the next session, but we'll just do a quick crack. So what I'll do is I'll just restart the computer. I'll actually reset it. And I'll just reboot it with a bootable ISO. At least I thought I would. Let's change to Hyper-V console so we can see a bit more. So let's open this one, and it's probably already booted because of me being too slow. So let's reset that. And let's boot it up from any installation DVD of Windows. So it can be a Linux as well. It can be whatever you can come up with that can access an NTFS disk. But this one is just I think it's an 8.1 installation media. You can choose your keyboard layouts if you want to. But Shift F10 is the quickest one, so Shift F10 is the shortcut. Let's just change the fonts a little bit so you can at least see it. We're lucky to have nice resolutions here, so let's try to make it a bit readable. So that's bold, and let's go up. Here we go. Okay, so let's find the drive with Windows. It's not C. It's probably D. Yes, D, Windows, System32. And the single command that cracks all of them is copy cmd.exe on top of set8c.exe. You can use utilman and stuff like that, but those can't work on all versions. This one works from XP until server 10 domain controllers. So that's why I'll use that one. Okay, let's replace it and just exit out. The other reason why I like to use this set8c is because it just gives me the most satisfaction on hacking into a Windows, because you can use some physical power to get in. So now you're here and you don't know the password. It used to be QWERTY1, so it's not working now. So then when you want to brute force yourself into the machine, you just bang on the shift key as hard as you can to get a command prompt. And let's see who we're running. So again, the same thing. Bit more fonts. And who am I? System. So the coolest way of doing this demo is do it on your customer who's not willing to take care of physical security of servers, and do it on a domain controller. Because that's the weirdest thing is that Mrs. System actually has power to, in this case, reset any passwords on the local computer, but if you do it on a domain controller, you can just join yourself to the enterprise admins group and destroy the whole Active Directory, so it's even better. So let's go for net user master and use password QWERTY1. Completed successfully. If someone's like telling you that you should be disabling your users so that they can be hacked into or something like that, so you can go net user administrator active. Yes, that's completed successfully. So now we have both, and we can just use the master one, so exit. Here we go. Why is my Windows 10 so sluggish? QWERTY1. Okay, welcome. Here we go. So that's a quick one. You do have to remember to revert the changes, but if you want to see how that's done, you have to go to the next session. Don't have time for everything now. So what do we do to prevent this? We use BitLocker, okay? So some basics of BitLocker. First of all, master keys. BitLocker needs to encrypt every single piece of information on your computer, meaning that every single block that is on your hard disk needs to be encrypted. So if it's encrypted once, we don't want to be encrypting it again if we need to change the password. So now I've encrypted hundreds and hundreds of thousands of bits, but then suddenly I realized that, okay, someone knows my password, so I need to change the password. You don't want to be doing encryption all over. It'll take ages. Windows 8, yes, it only encrypts used space, but if you're doing it after starting to use your machine, you've got quite a lot of used space. SSD makes it faster, yes, but anyway, the principle is you don't want to do the encryption all over again. So that's why they use these two different keys, or actually three different keys, you could say. So every sector on the hard disk is protected with a full volume encryption key. And that's never used by the system, that's never used by the user. It's there to stay, and it'll be there forever, unless we actually, if we actually decrypt the whole volume, then we can get rid of it. But otherwise, it'll be always the same. Then this master key is encrypted with a volume master key. And the volume master key is just another key. It's used by the system because it's fast. It's easier to just have a single master key. And it's quick to decrypt on the fly. But that's still no protection. Then comes in the actual authenticators. So now the volume master key is protected with a single protector or multiple protectors. If you don't have a TPM chip on your machine, you can nowadays use a password protection only, which means that this master key is protected by a password. This can be and is used mainly for Windows to Go sticks, because you might stick the Windows to Go device into a machine that doesn't have a TPM, so you can't rely on the TPM. The TPM will stay in the machine. So that's why Windows to Go only supports password protection, no TPM protection. If you don't have a TPM or if you can't use a TPM, for example, only a few years ago I was in a situation that whenever I had a customer in Finland that worked with Russia, you couldn't take TPM chips to Russia. This was illegal. So we had to have a possibility of doing BitLocker without TPM. So before Windows 8, the only way of doing it was to use a USB key. This means that the USB key has the authenticator. It's a physical evidence of proof. And if you have the stick, it doesn't matter where your hard disk is. You can take the hard disk away and use the stick, and you can open it. You can put it in another computer, use the stick, and open it. It's no way related to the hardware you're running except the hard disk. So it's not tied into your motherboard in any way. So it's the least protective one of these. So TPM protection is the one that we want you to use, and TPM protection is the one that we hope you are using as much as possible. TPM is a chip that can actually take all your boot information from the computer. So what kind of boot medias you use, what kind of boot sectors you have, what kind of master boot records you have, what kind of a BIOS hash value you have currently. It can take the boot order as one proof. And it stores these in registered called PCRs. And these PCRs cannot be changed after the initial boot up, and only if you restart it can you reset it. But there's no way of tampering with it. Well, there is a known method of using an electron microscope to dig into a TPM. So if you have people running all around with electric microscopes, then you might run into a problem. But let's talk about that a bit later on. Just keep it somehow real life, at least. So briefly, if anything in the boot environment changes, the disk cannot be read. So the TPM basically has a value of your boot environment. And if your boot environment changes, you can't read the disk. This means I can't use the Windows PE, which I used previously to crack it. They can't use a Linux boot up. They can take the hard disk, put it on another computer. There's no way of opening it. And it will block almost every single way of cracking a computer. There are a few exceptions, and we'll go through those. Simple and not as simple. Now, if this is not enough for you, then we can go to a two-factor authentication. And now we can start talking about securing the TPM. So you have the TPM, which will still keep half. For example, if you are using a PIN code, your TPM will still be protected against changes in your boot environment. But on top of that, you will need a PIN code to open the TPM. And now remember, the PIN code, how it's reset, how often you can try to guess a PIN code, everything related to the PIN code is actually done by the TPM. So if you are looking for policy setting from Windows that would change how many times you can try to guess a PIN code, you can find it. But the reason is because that's done at the TPM level. The only way to figure out how it works on your computer is basically taking the manufacturer's TPM specifications and check it out. It's done by the TPM. This also means that if you want to have a PIN code, you need a TPM. I will not mention the customer's name, but I was in a situation in Finland talking to a customer. I was doing a Windows 7 related project. I wasn't doing BitLocker. But I was in a meeting where I heard people talking about BitLocker. The company, which was really big, at least in Finland, it's considered really big, so it had about 30,000 computers. And now we're thinking about taking BitLocker. And I hear them saying that because of working with Russia, we can't use TPM. So we just bought about 2,000 USB devices. I couldn't help myself hearing what they were talking. And I was like, we bought the smallest USB disks you can find from Lazy at that time. The smallest one they have. We bought those so that when they have them on the computer, it's easy to keep there. And when they put it in their backpack, it won't break away. And at that point, I had to stop them. Think about it. The big customer had outsourced their IT. And the people who were doing it had actually bought this thousand of USB sticks. The smallest one they can find. And I was there, excuse me? If you have the smallest possible USB keys, why? So we can get the PIN codes because they don't have a TPM. Yeah, but the TPM is a feature of, I mean, the PIN code is a feature of the TPM. Really? Yeah, really. So what you should have bought were the biggest possible USB keys you can find so that no one will ever forget them in the computer. Because now when they put it in their backpack, they're not protected. Because they have the smallest possible ones. But they thought that the PIN code would be there after using the USB key. But it's a feature of the TPM. And think about it, the company who had ordered this from the outsourcing company. Like, honestly, everyone in that meeting at that time knew that the guys who were going to implement it for 30,000 computers had never tried it on a single computer. So, if you want to get a PIN code, you need a TPM. So, TPM plus PIN, that's one way of doing it, TPM plus USB. PIN codes are mental proof of ownership, and USBs are a physical proof of ownership. TPM plus USB works so that half of the key is actually stored on the TPM. And that half is protected against the boot environment changes. And the second half of the key is actually on the USB key. So you need both to unlock the computer. And you should always remember to take the USB key out after you have booted your computer. So it's not staying on the computer like they would have had. Now, what's the difference between physical and mental proof of ownership? If you know Chris Hallum from Microsoft, I believe Chris is not here. No? So I was talking to Chris when I was preparing this session for TechEd US, and he just, like for 15 minutes, he couldn't stop laughing when I told him the story about the Finnish nurses. I couldn't believe myself. I couldn't believe that I would ever be in a real situation like this. But honestly, I was in a meeting in Finland talking to some people from the public sector, and they were going to BitLocker protect laptops that are used by nurses in hospitals. And the nurses working in hospitals, is there anyone from Norway here? I know there's Norway has the most attendees from any country. I just saw the stats. Norway is by far with the most people here in TechEd. But Finnish nurses seem to go to work in Norway. They're escaping from Finland. And I honestly thought it was because of the better salaries. But now I learned something new because this guy in the meeting told me that we want to use TPM plus USB. Okay, but Sounds a bit complicated. Why would you want to have a USB? Because it's a physical proof of ownership. I was, yeah, I know that, but why don't you use a TP, why don't you use TPN plus PIN code? Well, if the nurses go to, for example, Germany or somewhere in Europe and they go to conferences and they get tortured. It's like, excuse me, what did you just say? Yeah, if the nurses get tortured, so they will give the PIN code. But when they have the USB key, they can just throw it away or swallow it. And I was exactly like this. I get paid. I'm a consultant. I can't start laughing. So when I told Chris this, Chris just told me that, Sami, it might not be the salaries. It might be that you in Finland, you just have some badass nurses. And then he broke down and laughed for the next 15 minutes and told me that you got to tell the story in TechEd. It's like, I've never heard of a thing like that. No, me neither. And I never honestly thought that I would hear it. Sitting in a room with the... Okay. So the thing is that I think this whole security thing gets a bit out of proportion. It's like you meet people who try to do things totally wrong. They forget that they should be buying certain hardware. They forget that they should be taking into consideration that they're going to use BitLocker on laptops, so they need to stay away from certain hardware models, for example. And then they start drawing these ridiculous threats that they think they would have. I don't think any Finnish nurse will ever get tortured. Like, Finland has been the least corrupted country in the world, but I don't think that if they go to Germany, they're going to get tortured. So there's different ways of doing it. You can do both. You can have USB plus PIN plus TPM. Just to be super secure. You need to have the USB key for physical ownership, then physical proof of ownership, then you have a PIN code for mental proof of ownership, and then you have the TPM against these boot changes. You can go haywire if you want. You can do network unlock if you have Windows 8 and all the machines need to have UEFI. Only UEFI supports this. So network unlock uses your Windows Deployment Services server role, WDS, and hosts a decryption key on the server, which means that whenever you boot up, your UEFI can read the key from the server, and it won't ask you anything. But if you get off the network, you will be asked for a PIN code. So it's like a hybrid. Why wouldn't you ask for a PIN code? Why wouldn't you ask for a USB key? Well, the most obvious reason is that if you want to do maintenance, if you need to reboot your machines during the weekend, there's no one putting in the USB key, there's no one typing in the PIN code. That's why I hate it. I don't want to have it if my customer doesn't really give me a good reason. For example, they have a written security policy that states that they need to have a two-factor authentication. It's fine by me, but it'll be only like the 5% of my customers. 95% of my customers run only TPM. Even with tens of thousands of users, because of the ease of maintenance. Security is always like somehow related to three things. People talk about usability versus security, but I think it's three things. It's cost, level of security, and ease of use. It's like a triangle. I always draw this triangle to my customers. Like cost, usability, security. You can only get two, you can never get three. You can get a usable and secure one, but it'll cost you a lot. You can get a usable solution cheap, but it won't be that secure. You can get a secure solution cheap, but it won't be that usable. It's like same thing in your real life if you are like having a job, trying to stay married and play golf. I've tried it. You can only do two. And on top of these keys that you have for protecting, you also need to have keys for recovery. So recovery keys are on top of this and are a totally separate thing. Usually, they are saved to Active Directory or MBAM, Microsoft BitLocker Administration and Monitoring, because Microsoft thinks that everyone has Microsoft Desktop Optimization Pack. So you should use MBAM, which is part of this. I love these acronyms. You need to use MBAM, which is part of MDOP. Okay, usually it's saved to Active Directory. We'll talk about recovery a bit more later on. What's new in 8 and 8.1? I will talk about Windows 10 as well, don't worry. But first, what's new compared to 7? In Windows 8, BitLocker is available in the Pro version as well. That's a very important thing. Not only for enterprise users, but actually the ones running Pro can also use BitLocker in a company environment. I don't know about you guys, but in Finland, not half of my customers have enterprise. So in Windows 7, you needed enterprise to have BitLocker. There's the network unlock that we talked about, and a really silly, silly thing which was still in place in Windows 7, which is the ridiculous bug, if you ask me, that a limited user couldn't change the PIN code. That's silly. Someone traveling around calls the help desk and tells them that I forgot my PIN code. What do? They tell him or her to use a 48-digit recovery password, and when they've used it, they can't change the PIN code. They'll have to use that 48-digit number every time they use their computer until they come back to the network so that someone can remotely go and change the PIN code with admin rights. Now, that's fixed in Windows 8, luckily. So you don't have to do all sorts of tricks that you had to do with Windows 7. Windows 8.1, things change dramatically also if you talk about Microsoft support. So if you ask Microsoft on how to deploy a secure BitLocker implementation in a company with Windows 7, Microsoft said that you will need a PIN code or a USB key to have a secure BitLocker implementation. With Windows 8.1, even the official statement changes finally to support the fact that I've been doing even with Windows 7, which is that you can use only TPM. We will go through all the threat factors that we have, so we'll get back to this many times. So TPM only is now the recommendation for most companies. It used to be an option, now it's the recommendation to do it. Only TPM, no more passwords, no more PIN codes. That sounds less secure, and yes, I think it might be less secure. But let's go through how BitLocker would be penetrated. So scenarios on how to crack BitLocker. Guessing the passwords, okay, the old one. You can guess a password. TPM lockout for PIN code entry should block you from trying forever. So TPM blocks passwords in a way that you might be familiar from other products. So if you guess the password like 5 times in a row wrong, then it'll freeze. And you'll have to wait for a minute to try again. If you guess it wrong still, you have to wait 2 minutes. If you still guess it wrong, you have to wait 10 minutes. Still guess it wrong, you have to wait 30 minutes, and so on. But that's all up to the TPM manufacturer. It's not a Windows setting. Recovery passwords are 48 digits long, so you can start guessing those as well. It'll take a while. With Azure shooting up hundreds of thousands of virtual machines, I think anything is possible, but anyway. I had the coolest moment of my life in a long, long time. I was in Build conference in April in San Francisco. And the party after Build, here we have parties like the country drinks and we go to stadiums and stuff like that, but there was the best one. The next door movie theater was rented out for us and they were playing Captain America 2 days before the official premiere on one of them, and all the rest of the theaters were for Xbox One to play games. It was like the huge screen. And they were at the same time showing us statistics from Azure that when you shoot up, when you start playing Titanfall, on the high peak levels of people playing Titanfall, Titanfall actually launches 100,000 virtual servers in Azure to support the rendering of the graphics. It's like getting that stat, seeing those stats and playing the games in heaven. Country drinks will be nice. Don't worry. Sorry for the organizers. Okay. DMA attacks, the most common one and most talked about. There are really, really big things you have to take into consideration when you choose hardware that you want to be good for BitLocker. So direct memory access is not something that Microsoft can fix, but DMA is a bus technology. So it's present in both FireWire and Thunderbolt. And it gives you the ability to read and change the contents of memory on your PC. This means that when your computer is running, that means it's on or it's in standby, it will have the BitLocker key in the memory. So you can try and extract it. Even funnier fact about Windows is that, I don't know how many of you know how Windows password protection actually works, but Windows password protection still works in a way that there's this DLL that can be easily hacked, because Windows kernel has a single bit, which is 0 if the password is wrong, and it's 1 if the password is right. So you can go with DMA and change the bit to 1, and then you can use any password you want. So if you have DMA access, it's dead easy to both get the BitLocker key and also just to hack into the machine. So all of those up there, FireWire, Thunderbolt, Express Card, PCMCI, PCI, PCIX, PCI Express, all of them are using DMA. So those should be on your no-no list if you're talking about implementing BitLocker. Let's talk about countermeasures later on, but first these few websites. So if you want to check out how this is done, so lostpassword.com is a great example. That's a cheaper one. Lostpassword.com just has this password recovery software that can take BitLocker keys if you have DMA access. It costs under $500. So it's used by NSA and DOD and etc. It says it here at least. Another one which is quite a lot used by agencies, which is considered like the de facto standard in many places, which is called Windows Scope. It's a forensic software, but if you check out their products, they have a product which can just access locked computers. You just plug the card in and you're in. It's very easy. If you have PC Express bus on your computer, you can just plug it in and you're in. Breaks any passwords. So the thing is that the price is ridiculous for both poor and rich. So when you show this to normal customers, their end users might be that, oh, but it's so expensive. Yeah, it's expensive. So it's a ridiculous number for poor people, but it's also ridiculous for the rich people, because that's really cheap if you talk to an agency. Like, would they pay 5,000? You remember the stories when they started decrypting the GSM signals? A single decryptor costs about 100,000 euros. And they had those like lined up in their shelves. Because it doesn't matter how much it costs when it's an agency, for example. So that's why it's like, it's really usable for them. And it's used quite a lot. So you can check those out if you wish. Now the thing is that it's not, as I said, it's not Microsoft's fault. And the weird thing is that Linux and Mac OS X are more vulnerable. So Windows is poor in a way because it cannot boot from FireWire. It cannot boot from Thunderbolt. And some people say that it's bad because competitors can do it. But now to see the good in this lack of features is the thing that Windows is actually quite easy to protect against it, because you can just have a policy delivered with group policies that can just block the buses. They'll just block both FireWire and Thunderbolt. But Linux and Mac both can be booted up from the bus, which means that it's in such an early phase that it's a lot more hard thing to block it in those OSs. But that's DMA, and we can't really do anything about that. If you want to do it on Windows with a policy, then you can block it. So there's a policy to block it, both Thunderbolt and FireWire. I'll show it to you in a second. Windows 10 blocks new devices with DMA from being installed before the computer is unlocked. So if no one's locked onto the computer or the computer is locked, there's no way of using DMA in Windows 10. Now, if you were in this session for some reason already in US half a year ago, that slide would have said Windows 8.1. And this is something that even I'm quite upset. But the thing is that when we started testing this out, in the first scenario of people actually getting Windows 8.1, and they wanted me, for example, to try and show it, I was trying to demonstrate it, and I couldn't get it to work, even on my own machine. And you can ask Chris Hallum from Microsoft for more information, but the thing is that even he said that he didn't have the information that it actually never was implemented in 8.1, although it was promised to be. In Windows 10, it is there, and now it's tested, so now we know. But the thing is that Windows 8.1 was already supposed to have this function in it. But that makes DMA a lot more easy to approach, but I'd still block it with the policy. If you ask me, I would still block it. If you've got instant Go devices, which are these like Atom and ARM processor thingies, then those shouldn't have DMA because it's not it's forbidden by the instant Go specification. So how to block? Let's go here and let's take a server. So we've got a group policy here, so let's just create a new policy. Let's call it BitLocker DMA block, for example. And this is not a hard thing to do. You can check it out from the links I had on the slides, or you can download this from my blog as well, because I just uploaded it about 2 hours ago to my blog. So blog.winfoo.com, the policies are there as well. You have the links later on as well. So let's go here, and let's go to administrative templates, system, and device installation, and device installation restrictions. And there you have two. For FireWire, you actually use this class identifier. The class identifier goes to prevent installation of devices using drivers that match these device setup classes. So it's used here. Show. Then adds the value. Okay. And checkbox also apply to matching devices that are already installed. And then there's another one, which is for Thunderbolt. And Thunderbolt needs a device ID. So Thunderbolt uses the other one. Prevent installation of devices that match any of these device IDs. Enabled, show, value. Okay, checkbox. Okay. So that's it. How would you know this if you don't have the values? Then just use device manager. So I shouldn't have any DMA devices here. So let's choose another one. So let's take, for example, just the disk drive, but the same principle. So you choose the device, go to properties, go to details, and device description. And there's hardware IDs. The longer the ID, the more specific to that exact version of this device. Right-click copy, or class IDs. So there's class GUID here. Right-click, copy, and there you go. Cold boot attacks. This is something that was all over the news a few years ago, especially. So the most known, best known is called Princeton attack, done by a few guys at Princeton University to show how you could actually preserve the memory state after shutting down the computer. So what they did was that they actually take your computer and hope it's on or in standby. So the memory is still alive. Then they take cold spray and they freeze the memory chips. And then they reboot your machine with the smallest possible Linux kernel so that it will not overwrite the memory. Keep the kernel as small as possible so it'll need the least amount of memory. So it'll overwrite just a few bits of the memory, hopefully. And then you should have the BitLocker key still in the memory, and you could read it. It can take only with new memory chips, it can take like 2 seconds and it's too late. But if you freeze it, you might have minutes. Some people have tested this out and they've had like 8 minutes or 9 minutes to do it. So with older chips with less dense memory, you can even go to minutes of time that you have to reboot it. Now this, if this session should change your mind about why Windows 8 would be secure with only TPM and Windows 7 wasn't, this is the main thing. Because if you've never thought of a good use for something that Microsoft seems to forget to mention in this context, is that it's impossible with secure boot. So if you have UEFI and Windows 8 and you enable secure boot, you will not be able to boot it with the required media to read the memory. It's totally usable. You can't use this attack against the computer with secure boot. They would have to create a small Linux and they would have to get it signed by Microsoft, basically. So if you have no use for secure boot, if you've seen the Windows 8 sessions and you're like, yeah, secure boot sounds like a cool thing, but I don't really know what's it good for, it's really good for BitLocker. It's especially good for BitLocker. So secure boot will only let you start up trusted and signed operating system loaders. You could technically remove the memory. Now leave the secure boot there. Take the memory off. So that's the next step. Now we are going really hardcore. Secure boot made it impossible in that machine, so take the memory and take it somewhere else. Take it to your super hyper Linux laboratory and read it with the memory reader. Freeze it first so you can run to your laboratory and then read it. Totally possible. And actually the only thing that I will have to say that actually is possible. And you can basically do it, but it's not that easy to do, especially if you're using, for example, system on a chip. So take a Surface, for example. It doesn't have memory chips to remove. You actually need to have devices that can be connected on the motherboard to read the memory. And now we're talking about guys like agencies, and do you really think they would go through all this trouble to get access to your computer? I don't. Why would they do it? If it's their profession to hack into computers, why wouldn't they use easier things to get in rather than doing it this really hard way? I know people from around Europe, especially in Poland, and if you ask real professionals, if they are sitting here, they're sitting in the back row, and they won't even say that they can. If I'm going to ask you, can you crack BitLocker, they will never say yes. The ones that you really should be scared of, basically. So the guys will tell you that, why the hell would I do this? Because it's easier to get the same information with money. Or just use a bad PowerPoint slide to infect the computer and steal it. Why go through all of this? So that's the thing that, if you are really concerned that this is your threat and it's obvious to you that this might happen, then you go for the pre-boot authentication. Use a PIN code. Use a USB key. But still, you should be in the 1 to 5% of customers if you need to go there. Or the other reason would be that you have a written security policy by the state, for example, that says that you need to have two-factor authentication. But all the other should be fine with TPM. Hacking a computer. Now we are going to do a demo. And always, when you are sitting in the front row, you might get lucky, which means that we will have these two volunteers here. He's using a computer, so you're from where?
Switzerland.
Switzerland, okay. And you're from Finland, I know your face, yeah. So, Swiss guy, you have a PIN code on your computer?
Yes.
Okay. You can get on the stage. Let's do it this way. So you come on the stage. I'm going to lock this down. You see my demo user? I only have a TPM protection. I don't have any USB keys or anything like that. So he's going to try to hack into my computer. You know how hard it is to get email? Because I thought it was a good joke, but it seems to be really hard to get any email because everyone sends me an SMS asking, like, why don't sami.laiho at live.fi answer anything? And I have to reply, no, it's first name, F-I-R-S-T. It was supposed to be funny, but it just, like, turned against me. We let him try to hack into my computer, and you, I'm trying to hack your PIN code. Okay? Fair enough. So, you can come here, and you can start when I say go, okay?
Okay.
And I'm going to go hack his PIN code, all right? So, you can do what you... I'll give you a heads up, you can start doing it now. Okay, go. And I will use what I call a universal BitLocker decryption key, which is this. Are you going to give me your PIN code?
6969.
6969, okay? Are you ready? I win. Thank you. You can go. Thank you very much. Okay, so you know how hard time I had to bring this through the security in the airport? Just like, they were like, can we take a look at it in your bag? Yeah, sure. I've kind of guessed it. And then they're like, what's this? And you know you should always try to be funny with the guys at the security. So it said, like, on the wall next to it, it said that you can have one bag and a personal item. So I was like, it's my personal item. Okay, it didn't really work out. Hey, well, what do you do for your work? Work with computers. And you fix computers with that? Yeah. So, but yeah, I got it through. I actually bought it from Atlanta last year for Tech at US, and now I brought it back to Finland, and now I'm going to go home with it. So it's my universal decryption key. Okay, and he didn't crack my computer. Hopefully he didn't break it because I need it for my slides. All right? So, honestly, what would you think will be the real risk factor in this? Is it this nerd with the järjestelmävalvoja t-shirt who's going to take the stuff into their Linux laboratory and read the memory? Or is it just going to be this guy here who's just gonna threaten you with some weird Finnish soap opera or otherwise give him the PIN code? So let's try to stay on Earth. Your nurses will probably not get tortured. So countermeasures, protecting BitLocker encrypted devices from attacks. There's a really cool white paper which was announced in the beginning of 2014, about half a year ago. It's very good. And also another white paper which has all the, or a document which has all the, for example, the hardware IDs needed. And if you want to get it easier, then you can also just go to my blog. So blog.winfoo.com, and it should have a BitLocker policies for TechEd Europe 2014 in Barcelona, blah, blah, blah. And you can download it from there as well. So, different security levels for different environments. You always need to think of what are we really against. Is it really this agent 00000? What's that? 007? Example of my English. So, 00. Somebody tweet that out now, please. So, Mr. 00? Or might it still be that it's what we call in Finland the Crutcher. And you have no idea who Crutcher is, but I'll tell you the story. The training company I work for had a break-in. So there was a guy breaking in, and he stole two laptops and one projector. Put them in his bag and escaped. And then the security guards called my company. You just had someone breaking into your office. They've stole two laptops and a projector, but you don't need to worry, because he was trying to get away using crutches. So he was honestly with a backpack trying to get to the next bus station like this. So the security guy just walked and caught him. So which one is more realistic. I'd say most of the people who are stealing your computers would be there to just get their next dose. There will be these agencies, etc., but they can afford 5,000. Now you have to do the decision of if you want to protect against everything, or do you want to keep the level of both security and usability high. Combinations, I've got these Lockit devices even here because I've been working with military. I can't mention the countries, but certain militaries are using these Lockit devices, so they have these USB keys for BitLocker, but these USB keys themselves have a PIN code to open up the hardware encryption on this before you can use it as a USB key for BitLocker. So you can combine hardware protection with software protection on BitLocker. You can also use policies to strengthen the protection. So basic policies. These are also available on my blog. So what you can do is, first of all, you can just make sure that your computers are locked. So always use a screensaver. Always prompt for passwords. If you think about computers that can be actually attacked with DMA, the thing is that if it has DMA, the attacker can just turn off the password protection, as I told you. So they change the bit, so they will always know the password. So change the protection the opposite. Don't display usernames, because they will have to guess the usernames. They will know the password, but they will have to guess the usernames. Or they will have to ask it from someone, or use the wrench. But anyway. Force hibernate. Don't allow standby. Because in hibernate, the BitLocker key is actually written on the encrypted disk. Because the memory containing BitLocker key will be in the hyperfill.sys file, which will be on the protected disk. It will be off. That means that standby is the most dangerous one for BitLocker. Because the memory is still alive. Lock TPM if too many logon failures to Windows. This is a new one, which is already usable in Windows 7, which is kind of cool. I don't know if you've used it, but there actually is a policy that if your user guesses the password too many times, what normally happens is it gets locked out. Someone needs to unlock the user. But with this setting, you can actually turn the way around using BitLocker, meaning that if they guess the password 5 times in a row wrong, it will actually need the recovery key on the next boot. So it'll use BitLocker at that phase, not just block the user account in Active Directory, but it'll actually block the BitLocker on the computer level. You will need the recovery key to get in the next time. It was not really advertised with Windows 7. It's a really unknown setting. And it took me a while to even figure it out because I found it Windows 8 and then they told me it was available in Windows 7 as well. So, policies. How would you go with this? Let's take a server. You can go to my blog site. Just take a group policy object, BitLocker, take the zip file, extract all, extract the files, and you just choose the group policy object itself. So group policy objects container, BitLocker, right click, import settings, next. Don't do a backup because it's empty. Just paste it in. BitLocker strengthening, next, finish. And you can get a neat report on the settings that it has, so you can look it up here. So this one has everything I just told you should have. So it has changes for the interactive logon of not displaying usernames on the logout screen and on the logon screen. It has the needed restrictions for FireWire and Thunderbolt. It has the sleep settings that will prevent you from going to standby. And some user policies to force the screensaver and password protected. So a recap. If you ask me, BitLocker implementation always starts when you're choosing your hardware. So if you're choosing your next hardware and you think about BitLocker, please take it into consideration. Try to choose devices that have no Thunderbolt, FireWire, PCI Express. USB 3 rules. Well, at least it did. So you can come to my last session on Friday and we talk about bad USB. So since last 2 months, I had to change the slide because USB ruled, but now there's a thing called bad USB, which basically threatens the whole USB stack. So we've got devices that will actually use USB holes, you could say, security holes, to just force themselves into computers. So USB has its own limitations. Hopefully we don't have to block the whole USB. It gets quite tough on using computers if you don't have anything to put your devices into. UEFI with Secure Boot, very important. TPM chips always, they need to be either on the hardware, meaning a physical TPM chip, or with the newer UEFI, it can also be in the firmware. So for example, ARM processors and Surface RT devices, they have the TPM functionality built into the firmware. It's not a physical chip anymore. Even better if it's dense memory on board, that's harder to attack. 4 strong passwords or phrases, so use good passwords. The same principle still applies, at least 15 characters if you're using good passwords, just because the old weaknesses of hashes in LAN manager still applies. Keep it 15 or more, but that's not the topic we're going to talk today. No administrative rights for end users. That's the most important thing if you want to protect yourself against bad USB. Now people are even more than they're talking about bad USB being a bad thing. They're asking me, how can we protect ourselves? And the most important thing is to keep yourself away from admin rights. That's the one thing you can do now, because it's actually a hardware fault in the USB devices itself, so we can't really fix this problem. 95% are good with TPM only, so aim for it. And if you're one of the 5%, use PIN codes, use USB, but just aim for TPM. Always remember to do backups. So this is just a short one. Save your recovery keys to Active Directory, which is the default, but if you are using BitLocker to go for USB sticks, please do implement something that's called data recovery agents, which is the Windows 7, since Windows 7 supported way of using certificates to secure your devices when you need to open them when people forget their passwords. Why? That's an amazingly weird thing about BitLocker to go, which is the fact that BitLocker to go will save the recovery key below the computer account that was used to encrypt the stick. Now this means that you're my customer, and you ask me for an encrypted USB stick, I would encrypt it, so the backup key will be under my computer account in Active Directory. Then I'll give the stick to someone, and after 2 years they call me and tell me they forgot the password. So where's the recovery key? It's under my computer account if it's still there. I'm an IT pro who installs his computer every year, so have I destroyed it or not? I don't understand. I think that USB keys are exceptionally good for transferring data from computer to another, but somehow Microsoft seems to think that they are really good for extending your hard disk space on the local computer. Because I don't understand, why don't they just, for example, save it under the user account? Because for me, it's a personal device that I'll use to take files from a certain computer to another. But now it's tied to the computer that first encrypted it, which is silly. So you can get past this by using DRA. It's supported since Windows 7, so then you will have a certificate that can, for example, open any USB keys within a certain organizational unit. So you can do it OU level. And of course, if you've got this thing if you ask me, it sounds like a song from Hanson Brothers, but MDOP is, of course, a really cool thing to have. And MDOP has something called MBAM. So MDOP and MBAM will give you an encrypted SQL database, which has a self-service portal to get the recovery keys. It's an encrypted SQL server, not relying on your Active Directory. So it is better, but it's costly, let's say. I won't say expensive in this conference, but it does cost. Okay? What then? Windows 10, what's new? Now really? I mean really, really? This time, newly attached DMA devices are gated based on the user sign into the device, meaning that if your computer is locked or no one's logged on, then you're fine. DMA devices can't be added. Azure AD backup of device encryption recovery key passwords. So Azure AD will be supported as a destination for backing up the keys. We will finally get something called virtual TPM. So virtual TPM is actually a feature of the new server, but it allows you to do VMs with BitLocker using a virtual TPM, which I've been waiting for years. Device encryption support outside of Instant Go, so Microsoft will not say that the computers you buy from the store can only be pre-encrypted if they're Instant Go devices like now, but if they just have certain hardware levels, they can just encrypt everything before you buy it. So we should be going to this everyone has BitLocker world in some years. And although it's a Windows Phone thing, the last one is that now you can actually just turn on using a switch, you can just turn on the protection on a Windows Phone. So you can encrypt your Windows Phone by choosing a setting rather than doing with the policy, like so far. Penetration challenge. We've got a few minutes still left. I'm going to a dinner meeting after this, which means I can't stay here for a very long time. So if you've got a lot of questions, you can come here after the session and ask me a few questions, but I'm going to run. But I won't be hiding for long, so you can find me on the security desk at the Microsoft area. But I would like to ask you a few examples, if you have any. So let's take a penetration challenge. So let's play a game. It's the final thing. Let's play a game that I forgot these two devices at the airport, and you found them. The devices are, the other one is a Surface 2 RT, and the other one is a ZenBook Prime UX 31A. I need to be specific. It has an operating system of Windows 8.1 on the other one, and the other one has Windows 10. Computers are on, so you find them in standby, but they are on. There are no user IDs visible. There's nothing visible on the logon or logout screen. Passwords for users are, let's say, quite hard to guess. BitLocker is used, but only TPM, no PIN codes, no USB keys. UAC is enabled, AppLocker is enabled. IPsec is used for authentication with the firewall. So security-wise, I'd say this would be my bulletproof BitLocker. But if you would find this, do you have any suggestions on how to break it? Because I don't want you to be leaving here thinking that I missed something. One good thing. One more good thing. If you need to think this through with your colleagues when you go home, the newsletter that I have has also this one. So that's a chart, but it's really big, so you can't read it. But this is an attack chart that I've had to create myself to my customers because Microsoft doesn't have one. So I created it to explain to bosses, explain to IT people why and how a BitLocker computer might be hacked into. There are places that say lock on cracked, BitLocker key compromised, so there are ways of doing it. So if you need that, that's a good thing, but you will have to enroll to my newspaper to get it. That's the trick. I know some of you are already, but I'll be sending it out during this ticket week. So, anyway, suggestions. What would you try? What do you want me to tell why it's not possible? Someone's gonna call someone. That's a good one. No one's tried that before, I'd say. I had the same thing in US. I asked people how many in the audience think they could crack a BitLocker by removing the memory and stuff like that. There's one. Do we have a mic? There's a microphone. Let's get it on tape.
I just wanted to say that we can use the network card. It's also possible to download memory from through network.
Yeah. So a network attack is one thing that Microsoft as well usually says that will be an attack vector. So someone could come and get through the network in your computer. Someone would try to steal your memory through your network. That is actually why I have on this slide these few basic things. And the most important thing with this is the IPsec authentication for inbound connections. So there is still the possibility that you will fool me for opening the connection. And then you can actually get the data. But as long as you're trying from outside, I've been using only IPsec on my computer. I've been doing a blog series about running a computer without anti-malware and firewalls right now. So my computer, although I'm traveling all over the world all the time, it actually has all firewall ports open and it doesn't have an anti-malware on it. Because I'm doing proactive security. So network is one, and you have to take into consideration also network. That's a really good thing, and it also almost sounds like a page comment, because I was hoping that someone would tell that, because it is one thing that I might have told you so many things now, thinking about this BitLocker security, that people forget about network security, and that's why I have another session on Friday about how to penetrate computers through networks as well. So that's another topic.
Yeah, one more thing with network. It's not about the ports, because most of the vendors use the same chipsets. And it's possible to hack into the network card primer so you can download everything from the memory. It doesn't matter how many ports or whatever you have done to secure it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter
and if I have... it's quite common, actually.
It doesn't matter if I have any ports or all ports open. But anyway, that's what I'm trying to do is authentication instead of blocking certain ports. So that's why I try to be proactive instead of reactive. But, okay, we've got network. Do we have any other? There's some I'm missing still, because I'm kind of fishing here. One obvious thing is the removal of memory. Okay, that's why you had these certain computer models here, because neither one of these have removable memory. So the ASUS is actually, it is important that it's that ZenBook Prime, not the other one. So you won't be left thinking, why did I choose this? That's the one reason. Neither one of these, Surface 2 RT or ZenBook Prime, have a detachable memory chip. It's still possible to read the memory. But as I said, you will never be able to protect, as long as we're talking about security. If you think that your computer cannot be penetrated in any way, you hopefully, I believe that you don't think so, because it's not possible. There will be a, let's say, a human factor at least. So one thing we are still missing is, of course, money.
I would ask you for the password.
Yeah.
Very nice, thank you very
much. Yeah, so this is... Okay, I can repeat that. So he would ask me for the password very nicely. Where are you from?
Sweden.
Sweden, okay. So he's going to hit me. If it was a nice-looking lady from the US, she might be asking it nicely. But he's a nice Swede, so he's probably going to hit me. Anyway, but that's the one vector that I was hoping that someone would, of course, say. So it's money. Pay the guy a million. I'm not kidding. Like, you know, as we talked, if it's an agency, just pay them enough. Everyone seems to have a price, although what they say. I will admit I have a price. If you pay me enough, I will definitely open my computer. Just, we can start after this, you'll just tell me how much. So there will be a price. And the other one is social engineering. PowerPoint, for example, is a very good way to hack into computers right now. It doesn't matter if you have BitLocker, because it's an online attack. It's not an offline attack. If you want to see PowerPoint attacks, you can come to the next session, so that has PowerPoint attacks. PowerPoint is on the news all the time. I'm not going to run away And I definitely want to talk about the networking stuff a bit more, honestly, because I don't know why, but even the audio here is quite, when you talk on the microphone, I can hear like echoes from different sides, so I heard like half what you said. So let's take that offline. What I'm going to leave you with are a few things. So I would like to thank you for coming, and I would like you to follow me on Twitter. Us MVPs get measured by how much people are following us on Twitter. It's an American company anyway. Related content, I have two more sessions. One is troubleshooting, called Black Belt Troubleshooting, and the other one is called Black Belt Security. The other one is repeat from US, and the other one is brand new that I've never before presented. If you want to talk to me, you can find me at the security booth on the Windows area at the expo on Wednesday, Thursday. I'll have to show this. Just give me a second. Windows resources, because these need to get on the recording. So there are resources here. And this will be available on Channel 9 later on. I do hope that you fill in the evals. That's the only way a Finn who had to use 8 years to get to TechEd last year for the first time. So I want to get back, so I want you to fill in the evals. You can get the evaluation code here, or you can find it on your schedule builder. With this, I would like to thank you for coming. Thanks.